Rewatch Podcast presents the Police Academy Film Series Rewatch. Join us each week as we go from the Academy to Miami to Moscow and revisit every film in the Police Academy franchise. Send your feedback to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or follow us on Twitter at rewatchpodcast. Today we're discussing Police Academy 5, Assignment Miami Beach. I love the title.
It's good, isn't it?
Starring Michael Winslow, Bubba Smith, George Gaines, David Graff, Leslie Easterbrook, Marion Ramsey, G.W. Bailey, Lance Kinsey, Janet Jones, Matt McCoy, Renee Auberjonis.
Auberjonois, I think it is.
Auberjonois.
Yeah, that kind of, anyway.
And Tab Thacker, directed by Alan Meyerson. Welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast. I'm Corey, and I don't care who you are, butt wipe.
And this is Nathan. You leave the swimming area now, mister. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. How's your week been?
The week's been good.
Yeah, yeah, so you managed to squeeze in Police Academy 5 into your busy schedule.
I did manage to squeeze in Police Academy 5 and started. What else did I start quickly? I started season 7 of Mad Men finally.
I haven't watched a single episode of Mad Men.
I like it, but Don Draper, it's a very depressing show. It's not very uplifting, that show. Yeah, although I have come to the conclusion that Mad Men is totally surrounded by the words, let's celebrate. And when they say let's celebrate, they just get totally shit-faced.
I thought you were going to say they all just get blowjobs.
No, they do that as well, but that's right. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Mad Men.
No, we're here to talk about Police Academy 5, Assignment Miami Beach. So let's check out the trailer, right?
Let's do it.
They're back.
Come on in and register.
Jones. Hightower. Hooks.
Back off, you talking!
Callahan.
I left.
House.
This old baby, it doesn't even break, it pulverizes.
Tackleberry, Proctor, Harris, and Commandant Lazard. Their assignments? Miami Beach. And they're beside themselves with excitement.
Get ready for Eric Lazard!
This time, instead of making arrests, they're going to take one.
Thinking.
But when ruthless criminals kidnap Lazard, his loyal force put their vacation on hold and become bent on revenge. Once they spring into action, man for man, tan for tan.
Whoa, dork.
They're the hottest force on the surf and sand. And they'll do whatever it takes, no matter how much it hurts.
Shark!
Police Academy 5.
Leave the swimming area now, mister.
It's the best in fun and guns under the sun.
Okay, so getting into some trivia.
So, Police Academy 5, Assignment Miami Beach, debuted at number one at the box office when it opened on March 18, 1988. It actually still freaks me out a little bit, Corey, that this is, we're talking five films and it's only 1988. Like, the first one debuted in 84 or something like that. So, they're not mucking around, are they?
Nope, every year we're getting another Police Academy.
Every single year, I know. It opened with a weekend gross of $6,106,661. It would go on to earn a domestic box office total of $19,500,000. The film actually faced very strong competition in early 1988.
Again, yeah, a very strong competition. Who Framed Roger Rabbit? A huge release, you know. That was the mix of animation and live action. I mean, huge budget for Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
And it was also Roger Zemeckis' follow-up to... Well, I don't know if it was his direct follow-up, but it was certainly post Back to the Future, yeah?
Yeah.
I'm not too sure if Back to the Future 2 had come out at that point. I don't think it had.
Well, I remember they did 2 and 3 back to back, so could have been, or I think that might, yeah, this might have led up to.
Yeah, that's right.
Two anyway. And three. Coming to America.
Yep.
Big, Crocodile Dundee 2, which was highly anticipated. Crocodile Dundee, it was huge in the 80s. So the follow-up to that, massive release.
Crocodile Dundee was like, for people that aren't in Australia, I don't think you really realise how big a film that was in Australia. Ginormous, one of the biggest box office grossest films of all time. And it did absolutely amazing business. Like, I'm talking Avatar kind of business. That's how big that film was in 1988. Yeah. Huge.
And America was going Australia crazy, and Crocodile Dundee was the reason for that. They just loved it. So, massive release. Beetlejuice.
Oh, and a favorite.
A big, you know, massive breakout for Tim Burton. His follow-up to the Pee Wee Herman movie, if I remember.
Yep.
Bull Durham, Biloxi Blues. Mm-hmm. I think that was massive. The Great Outdoors, Big Business, and Funny Farm, which it's a classic comedy, Funny Farm.
Man, I'd go as far as to say probably out of those 10 films that you just mentioned, 4 or 5 of those are kind of classics, like bona fide, kind of happy to watch them right, as in to get off the mic right now and watch them straight away because they're that good. So Police Academy 5 came out during that period and kind of faced some pretty stiff competition, didn't it?
It's amazing that it opened at number one. You know, I think we've said it every week. It opened at number one for its weekend release. So they're not doing too bad, you know. Police Academy 5.
Both from the producer's point of view, it's the golden goose from their perspective. And the films, you know, as we said before, there's not a lot of info out there regarding budgets. But they continue to make money, and they wouldn't make more of them if they weren't successful. So it's pretty interesting.
I think the big thing here, of course, Steve Guttenberg has left.
Yes.
The franchise.
I know.
Which, everybody goes on about it. You know, oh my God, Steve Guttenberg didn't come back for number 5. And, you know, he's gone now. He's not going to come back for any of the other films. And we kind of debated that really outside of number 1, he really hasn't done that very much for 2, 3, and 4.
And I've kind of read some conflicting reports as to why he left. I've read one that said Steve Guttenberg turned down the lead role and gave a firm no to any other Police Academy sequels that might turn up. And they did. He turned them all down. 2 decades later, he expressed in an interview that he actually regretted turning down the chance to star in the sequels and was among the main people trying to make another Police Academy film, which I kind of find interesting. But I also read another report that says Steve Guttenberg was unable to star in this film due to scheduling conflicts with filming 3 Men and a Baby, which in itself was a sizable hit at the time. Instead, the filmmakers decided to cast Matt McCoy as a new character. So it's hard to know what to believe in that situation, but I suspect he kind of gave them a bit of a firm no. What do you think?
The fact that he was doing 3 Men and a Baby, I think Cocoon was probably around this time as well. Short Circuit. So, you know, he was moving on to other things. So I could see why he would just say, no, I'm done with Police Academy. And then, of course, you know, they say that now he's petitioning to make another Police Academy movie.
Yeah, I know.
Steve Guttenberg today, of course he wants to make another Police Academy movie. It's what he's known for. When people think Steve Guttenberg, they think Police Academy before anything else. Maybe Cocoon.
Yeah, well, at the time, you're dead right, man. He was making Cocoon, and he did that in 85, and then Short Circuit in 86. Amazon Women on the Moon, which he played, it's actually an earlier kind of Zucker Brothers kind of film, that one. It's actually quite good. If you haven't seen Amazon Women on the Moon, it's hilarious. It's like a skit-based comedy. It's by the same people that made the Kentucky Fried movie. It's actually quite good, and Steve Guttenberg, if I remember rightly, plays a pretty funny role in that. So, yeah, I'd recommend checking that out. But, yeah, he was playing, he did 3 Men and a Baby in 87, Cocoon the Return in 88. So he wasn't opposed to doing a sequel, was he?
No, definitely not.
Oh, yeah, and then he did 3 Men and a Little Lady in 1990. So again, another sequel.
Had Steve Guttenberg agreed to appear in the movie, his character of Mahoney was to be promoted to lieutenant by the end of the film as well. So a bit of a progression.
And let me just say right now, without giving too much of a spoiler away, somebody very important does get promoted to lieutenant at the end of this film, and it's not Mahoney.
Yeah, I know. That's right. I guess it's the other person that you recognise in Police Academy. Yeah,
exactly. Bobcat Goldthwait did not reprise his role as Zed. due to not being able to come to a financial agreement with the producers. Because of this, the filmmakers actually believed that there was no point in bringing back Sweet Chuck without Zed. And so Tim Kazurinsky ended up not being involved either, which in my mind, Corey, is a shame.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
But it's funny because we said last week that Bobcat and Kazurinsky were brought on last minute. Because the guy who played Fackler was having a payment dispute. And this time around, it's them saying, like, I guess we want more money or something like that. Like, I guess maybe Bobcat Goldthwait felt that because he came on and sort of saved the day or something in that last movie and did such a good job that he felt maybe he had to get paid more to come back for another one.
I also kind of suspect, too, that Bobcat Goldthwait maybe didn't want to get too typecast. Possibly, so he probably upped his fee and kind of went, well, if you want me to be in this, I'll do it, but I want it to be for the right price, because the reality is if I keep doing these movies, I will literally be remembered for. Because, I mean, Bobcat Goldthwait, as much as he played the crazy, kind of kooky, crazy voiced actor in these films, I'm pretty sure that's not his character off screen. He's a pretty well respected filmmaker these days, and I mean, I know he kind of did a lot of acting in his own right that wasn't playing this character.
Yeah, as far as I know him these days is as a director, and apparently his films are quite critically acclaimed. I haven't really sought them out or anything like that, so I can't really speak to it, but yeah, people seem to like the stuff he makes as a director.
Yeah, he's very well considered. Yeah, from what I understand, you could certainly do a lot worse than watching one of his films. I should definitely seek some more of them out, truthfully, and kind of give them a chance, because for whatever reason, they just haven't kind of passed me by. I mean, truthfully, Corey, there's so much stuff to watch. You can't watch everything.
Exactly.
If you know what I mean. There's so much good stuff out there. So
yeah, anyway. Yeah. Maybe one day you get around to checking out some of his stuff.
And when you have to watch 7 Police Academy films in 7 weeks, it's hard to fit other stuff in.
This is true.
Yeah. Anyway, regarding his experience working on this film, René Auberjonnais, I have no idea how to pronounce that.
Now, I know, it's a very French-looking name.
Before I read this out, you do know who that actor is, don't you?
Yeah, he's in Deep Space Nine, right?
Yes, he's Odo. Yeah.
Odo
in Deep Space Mind, the shapeshifter.
Yeah.
And he's a very integral figure. And truthfully, he's fantastic in it. He's really, he's really good.
It's a very different role from this one.
it's a very different role, but it's kind of interesting because this bit of trivia says, regarding his experience working on the film, René Auberjonnais stated, "Why I choose to do things is a mystery to me sometimes. I've done things that on the face of it, you think, why would anybody do Police Academy 5? I had to look at the role and see if there's a reason to do it. And then I did it because it was an opportunity to play a character that nobody else was ever going to let me play. I had a great time doing it. Don't regret it for a moment, and I'd do it again in a minute." And you know what? I actually think he's actually a pretty good part of this this film. He certainly tries his hardest, doesn't he?
He does a pretty good job in this movie. I'll give him that.
What else do we have?
Oh, man, I love this.
Yes, this is good.
Apparently this is revealed in the movie. I might remember the scene that he uses this, but apparently because Lasard is an avid golfer, which I think was set up in the last movie when he's hitting the golf balls around his office, his goldfish is apparently named Birdie.
Yeah, that's
a direct reference to the fact that he likes golf. I did notice too that when he's walking along with his golf bag at the airport, that his club covers little goldfish as well.
I actually didn't notice that.
Yeah, they just bring that along, you know.
Wow, like that's goldfish, hilarious. So apparently during that scene when he's kind of walking through the airport, apparently he's kind of triggering out all those golf balls through a mechanism in his fingers. I think there's a button that he's putting in and all the golf balls are kind of hitting the ground. So
speaking of that, there are a few shots where you can see him pushing like a little lever on the side of his
really
bag, to release the balls.
Wow, there you go, mate. This is the last time we see Officer House Conklin in the series. He only survived 2 films, man.
Yeah, 2 films.
Nothing.
I don't even know why he's in this movie, to tell you the truth, but whatever.
He's like a loved member of the team in this film, isn't he? Like, he's a totally loved member. Like,
he's just become a police officer and he gets invited to this, like, ball.
But he's not like he was a citizen on patrol, for God's sake. he was one of the guys with, you know, the hanging out with David Spade and all that kind of stuff.
It makes just as much sense as Zed being a police officer. Yeah.
Now, this is we're getting to the end of the trivia. The movie script and some promotional materials actually lists Tony's full name as Tony Stark. The surname was actually edited out of the film after it was discovered by Warner Brothers executives that Tony Stark was a registered trademark owned by Marvel Comics for use in their Iron Man comics.
Well, there it is.
I'm not surprised that they just got rid of it straight away, because I mean, Marvel would just, you know, lawsuit straight away.
Exactly. And it's not like Tony Stark is like a super common name. It's like, where'd you get that from?
Yeah, and it's kind of weird too. There's actually a rapper out there from part of the Wu-Tang Clan named Ghostface Killer, and his alter ego is Tony Stark, and he's been releasing records under this, he releases the album under Ghostface Killer, but his pseudonym as a rapper whilst he's rapping is Tony Stark, and there's 7 or 8 records of this, and I'm surprised that Marvel Comics has kind of let him get away with this for so long. I'm surprised they just didn't, like, pull the plug as soon as they heard and sort of said, dude, you need to stop this now, otherwise there's going to be trouble, you know?
There was that Stephen King movie as well, Maximum Overdrive.
Oh, my Lord. There's a film I've never seen. The only Stephen King directed film. Have you actually seen it?
Yeah, I have. And in that movie, there is a truck that is shipping toys, I guess. And on the front of it is a huge Green Goblin face. And whenever I watched it, I thought, wow, how'd they get the license to the Green Goblin in front of that truck? It's very weird.
Yeah.
So, you know, this weird stuff happens in movies sometimes.
So there you go. So, you know, for a Police Academy 5, there's a surprising amount of trivia, isn't there?
Yes, indeed. Shall we get into our discussion of it?
Yeah, I think we should. It's time.
Let's do it. All right, so the film opens and we have Paris and Proctor breaking into the office of Commissioner Hurst.
Yes, right at the start.
Yes, because he's trying to find something, anything, that can get Lasard out of the academy so he can take over. He's still going for it. He wants to be Commandant Harris at the academy.
He's just determined, isn't he?
Yeah, and he finds what he's looking for.
Yeah, and him and Proctor are, like, in that scene, like, they're bumbling kind of fools. They're not the most covert kind of, you know, robbers in the world. I mean, I think they show up at like 3 a.m. and they don't really take into consideration the fact that there might be a janitor kind of walking around. And then out of nowhere, they hear someone kind of walking down, and doesn't Harris kind of tell him to kind of go away? And he lets the janitor think that there might be like a lady in there.
Yeah, exactly. They find a bra in one of the drawers and they're like, oh, Commissioner Hurst. So yeah, he holds that out to Bob the janitor and he's like, oh, I understand, sir. It's actually a pretty good gag because he's like, I really appreciate that, Bob. And then Proctor's like, yeah, thanks, Bob.
And then Commissioner Hurst shows up to talk to Lasard or Harris or whoever it is, like a scene or two later, and says, for some weird reason, my janitor quit.
It is a pretty good gag. I like it.
So Harris and the dim-witted Proctor are there to kind of find any reason to get Lasard out of the police academy, and they discover he's due for mandatory retirement, which makes Harris a very happy camper because he realizes, right, this is it. Oh, I think, doesn't he say something like, oh, this will have to find its way to the personnel office and they'll have to kind of force his hand. And there's an awful lot of scenes of Lasard being given awards and rallies and all that kind of stuff in this film, isn't there?
It's actually a graduation, right, at the academy.
Yeah, that's exactly.
So he's giving out the new officers that have graduated the academy. There's a weird part where this female officer gets like knocked into his groin.
Yeah, that's right.
Like randomly, you're like, what?
And George Gaines just kind of stares into nothingness for about like 30 seconds and in this really strange way. And then he kind of realizes he's got to get back to business.
House becomes a police officer there. That's where they set up that, House is no longer Citizens on Patrol. He's a police officer now.
Yes, yeah, very Weird. Much so. But before he retires, Commander Hurst shows up and sort of says, look, for all of Lasard's wonderful, you know, career, we've decided to kind of honour him in the best way possible by calling him Police Officer of the Decade. And in order for him to receive this award, they send him down to Miami. But before they kind of get there, they do break the news to Lasard that he has to retire because of the mandatory retirement rule. And you can see it at the graduation speech. You can see the disappointment on George Gaines's face. Like he's shattered by this news, isn't he? Totally shattered.
Exactly. He sort of just walks off in a haze, and Harris is gloating, you know, he's like, oh, enjoy your long overdue rest.
Yes.
You know, he thinks he's in, you know, this is his next step. He will become commandant.
I love how confident Harris is. I mean, it's not like he's got the runs on the board I think there's actually a scene later on in the film when the commander's actually talking to Harris, and he goes, well, don't think for a second just because you feel like you are the most qualified man, that means you are the most qualified man. And it kind of makes it clear to him that as much as he might be qualified, he doesn't have any respect of any of the graduates or the staff. Like, everybody loathes him and doesn't want to be around him, and for that reason alone he may not get the award. So in some ways Harris in this film tries to redeem himself in a small way, even though he fails miserably. But
yeah, he says he's going to, but he once they're in Miami, he really does nothing to try and get their respect. It's weird. He
does nothing, does he?
Yeah, it's the whole reason for him going to Miami, because he's like, we'll do it and it'll make me look classy and, you know, like, I'm the bigger man here and stuff like that. And then, yeah, once they're there, nothing he does is him trying to redeem himself. So you're just like, well, what was the point of you going there in the first place if you were just going to act like the same old tool that you always are?
I know. And you know, as Lasard gets sent to Miami, he, of course, decides to bring his favorite graduates with him. And, of course, it's the same old crew: Sergeant Hightower, Sergeant Jones, Tackleberry, Hooks, Lieutenant Callahan, and new graduate officer Thomas House Conklin, which we met in the last film as one of the COPs, Citizens on Patrol.
Well, and at the same time, because, like, Mahoney's not around, they don't even mention that Mahoney's not there.
They don't even slightly mention him, do they? Okay.
So Lasard has to mention, oh, my nephew was a police officer in Miami, so we'll get to meet him when we're there as well.
That's exactly right.
You know? So he's kind of like brought out of his woe is me, you know? Oh, I have to retire, but hey, I can go out in style because I'm being honored with police officer of the decade. Like, it's funny, it's police officer of the decade. It's not even of the year. They're just like, of the past 10 years, you are the best cop out of every cop in the United States.
It kind of dawned on me too that there's no Feldman in this film. I just realized that then. Like, she was actually a pretty good part of the last film. Certainly one of the better parts.
Are they going to have her graduate as a cop as well?
I don't know. If they could have House Conklin graduate, then they can have her too, you know?
Well, they're in Florida. They could have said, like, she retired to Florida or something, so she shows up.
And the other thing that's a bit unclear too is, are they there just to celebrate with Lasard, or are they there to work? It's unclear what they're there, because for two-thirds of this film, it's party time, isn't it?
It's funny, though, because it's like we say, like, for some reason, our House is a cop as well, so he's there. And when Lasard's going on about, like, oh, I'd feel so good if, like, all my favorite graduates would come with me, and House is like, we'll do it, sir, but only for you.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
Like, do you even know each other? Like,
do you have a history at all? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, why are you talking right now, House?
They just keep staring at each other. We've got to do something.
I know how you feel, sir. I was ready to toss in the towel, too. But then I met a man who changed my life. That man was you, sir.
He said, take what you have, however little, and do your best with it.
Never quit. Never lose hope. That's the Lasard I knew.
And where is that Lasard now?
Right here. I God, you're right. I was feeling sorry for myself.
But no more. I'm still being honored at the National Police Chiefs Convention in Miami Beach.
Affirmative, sir! You're there.
Head held high.
God, sir!
Yes, sir.
It will be my finest hour!
That's the spirit, sir!
Good shot.
It would make my crowning moment only greater if my loyal graduates could be there to share it with me.
Miami Beach? All that surf, sun, and fun?
Then you can meet Nick, my nephew. He's a policeman in Miami Beach.
We'll do it, sir, but only for you.
You have all given me new hope.
That's the way to go, sir.
I cannot stay. And I'll go out in style. Miami Beach, get ready. Get ready for Eric Lasard! Good to have you back, sir.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy.
So, but whatever. It's the setup for it, because I have to say, like, once they get to Miami, it gets better. But first, yeah, there's the whole thing with Harris wanting to go to Miami to sort of get some respect, I guess.
Yeah.
There's this whole thing about how Proctor accidentally calls Lassard's office for some reason.
That's right.
And gets Jones, who pretends to be the airport. So they he wants to go like first class and everything. So they book him like this budget rent-a-plane thing. And yeah, it's an interesting setup.
Hasn't Harris learned that Proctor, it's the Keystone Cops with that guy, man. It's just, seriously, get rid of that guy. He's just, I mean, I just don't understand why Harris has him around. Like, I understand it's a comedy. I get that. It's a movie. I get that too. He's just a bumbling fool the whole time, Proctor. Yeah, and you're right. He kind of calls the wrong number. He gets put through to Jones, and then Jones has got Hightower in the background, and then Hightower out of nowhere just makes a phone call. And I think it's like he's kind of going into the internet and typing Google, and he just puts in budget rental plane or something like that. And those are the only words you kind of hear from him, and he's got like this big smile on his face. So,
well, it's what I mean, though, because Harris is like, we will go to Miami and we'll help, you know, celebrate Lassard and everything to make me look good. But, you know, they play this prank on them with the plane. So when they're at the airport and they find out, oh, it's a private plane and stuff like that, you know, and he's gloating about the fact that they go, oh, we're going first class, you know, we're so amazing and stuff like that. And I'm just like, actually, you're coming off as a pretentious tool, and you're really not making anybody like you. And like I said, for the rest of the movie, he really does nothing to make himself look good at all.
But do you know what
he doesn't even try to.
Do you know what I like about Lassard's character? Like, is that he plays it in such a way that he doesn't really see poorly on people. Like, even Harris, for all his ridiculousness, he doesn't. I don't think Lassard hates Lieutenant Harris at all. Like, he treats him with respect and talks to him kind of like a normal human being and gives him the appropriate kind of respect that he feels he kind of should get. But, I mean, Harris doesn't do the same back to Lassard, does he?
No, not at all. But, you know, simultaneously, there's this robbery that happens at a museum.
Yes.
These diamonds are stolen from some ancient Egyptian.
Yeah, it's like a scene out of that Catherine Zeta-Jones film, Entrapment.
Yeah, a little bit.
Sorry.
And it makes you wonder how these guys pulled off the robbery, because we get to see them. They're at the airport. They're getting ready to head to Miami as well, because they're going to fence these diamonds off as the, I guess some crime lord has commissioned them to steal it.
Yes.
For him, and then he would sail off into international waters. So, they've got these diamonds and they're at the airport and they have this bit of a run-in with Lassard, who's dropping golf balls throughout the airport.
These three guys that are just the most inconspicuous guys ever. Like, they stick out like sore thumbs. Like, they're all dressed in kind of like Miami kind of attire and like bad moustaches, and they're being loud and obnoxious and kind of over the top. And basically the gist of it is that he's carrying like a black bag with all the jewels in the airport, and thanks to Lassard dropping golf balls, and I think there's like, don't they slip on one and the bags get thrown into the air, then out of nowhere doesn't the bag land like on a travelator or something like that next to Lassard's, and of course Lassard picks up the wrong bag as he goes to jump on his plane. Like, stupidly, they only realize, like, you know, the next day when they show up at the dock and they speak to, you know, Fat Tony. Sorry, that's a Simpsons reference, I should say. and if you do, cliched mobster number two. Yeah, that's exactly right. Fat Tony. Sorry, I shouldn't say that. Yeah, they only realize that they've got the wrong bag there. And then, I mean, I would have thought at some point, if you're carrying such important cargo, you would have unzipped it just to have a quick look to make sure everything was okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the fact that, Lassard's goldfish is in the bag.
Yes.
I think it's a funny gag, you know. They keep pulling out this goldfish thing. So the fact that he actually, like, packed his goldfish in his bag and, like, the water doesn't splash anywhere, like, it makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
That he would be able to carry the goldfish like that, but whatever. I go with it. I think it's funny.
I reckon this is probably one of the best goldfish gags of all time. I don't think it's been done like this before. I mean, it's five films of goldfish gags. I mean, I think it peaked in, like, you know, Police Academy 3, like, where they were really pushing the goldfish gags every 5 seconds. Yeah. Like, from the point where Lassard would be at the top of thing, and we spoke about this in a previous episode, where he'd, like, drop it, and Mahoney was, like, underneath, and he'd just catch it out of nowhere.
You know, I have to say, I love that George Gaines is in this movie. Like, he's like, lead player in this movie. He's a lead character for whereas the other ones, he was just very sort of drop in for a scene here and there, and that's it.
He's front and center in this film, and he's definitely got more lines in the script and whatnot. And I think the film is kind of much better off for it. Like,
oh yeah,
yeah. And you know what? So I like this film. I didn't love it, but I liked it. So yeah, and I think a lot of it is kind of down to George Gaines' portrayal of Lieutenant Lassard. And you know, I think you kind of brought up a good point where you sort of said the film kind of comes alive a little bit when they actually get to Miami. Because out of all of the Police Academy films, I think this has the best realized storyline outside of the Police Academy.
Well, before we even get to Miami, what did you think of the stuff on the plane? The plane ride over.
Oh, I actually thought that went on for a long time.
It did, actually.
Was it just me? Like, if that was any other film, that would have been like 30 seconds of the film. This went on for 3 or 4 minutes of gags.
There was a whole series of stuff that happened. Like, Hooks is next to a guy who's smoking.
Yes.
Back in the day when you could smoke on a plane. And he put it out so she gets out the fire extinguisher on him.
Yeah, that's right. And doesn't Jones get up to something?
He uses these sound effects to make it look like he shaves Commissioner Hurst's hair off.
Yes.
Pop his brain out or something. I don't know.
I know.
Weird. House goes to the other side of the plane to speak to Hightower.
Oh, that's right. The plane tilts. They do a weight gag, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. He gets back. They make him get back to his seat because the food is coming out. Oh my god. Callahan even has a thing with like two kids staring down at tits.
Oh my lord, that's true.
Eyes front.
Man, seriously, for 5 films now, there's been a lot of gags about Callahan's tits, hasn't there?
But yeah, you know, we get to Miami, and I think this is where it really takes off. I just love the aesthetic of it, you know? It's just, I don't know, whenever I think of, like, cliched 80s stuff, I think of all the things that happen in Miami during this movie, because it goes like 80s to the max, doesn't it?
Oh man, it does it ever. Like, from everything they do on the beach and the way they're kind of partying and the music and the clothes and you name it, just everything about it is just like, you know, well, let's face it, man, it is 1988. The Seoul Olympics was just about to start, you know what I mean? So it is kind of one of those things, so yeah.
Yeah, but it is. I don't know. I just love the tone of it once they're in Miami. Walking around the hotel and the decor there. And yeah, you know, they go to the beach and play frisbee and volleyball.
And don't they play like limbo and all that kind
limbo
of stuff?
Limbo later on, yeah. So I just love it. But yeah, we meet Assad's nephew.
Yes, Matt McCoy, who is, for all those Seinfeld fans out there, Lloyd Braun from
his, yes, sir.
He's Lloyd Braun from Serenity Now, that episode.
What's his name? Nick.
Nick, yeah. Yeah. Nick.
So he's our Mahoney replacement, pretty much. Like, it's hard to get around, you know. They had to put somebody else in to fill Mahoney's shoes since Gutenberg wasn't coming back, so we've got Nick.
How'd you think Nick went?
It was all right.
I thought he did okay.
Yeah, he had some good stuff, you know, that when they're down on the beach and, yeah, they're playing frisbee, he has a run-in with Harris. Man, I actually love it because Harris is there talking to Proctor about the best way to get the perfect tan and stuff.
Some guy standing in my sun, that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, you know, he's like cordial towards Harris. He says, oh, you know, I didn't get a chance to meet you at the airport or anything. Of course, his introduction at the airport was chasing down a guy dressed as an old lady who was a purse snatcher.
Keep in mind, this is Lieutenant Harris who, after learning that he needs to kind of build a better rapport with all the cadets, and he's still a total ass to absolutely everyone. Like,
exactly.
I mean, if Harris wanted to kind of build a better rapport, he kind of could if he wanted to, but he's just rude from the get-go. And, like, you're right, he's totally rude to McCoy, and he's so rude to Proctor. Anyway,
the comeuppance he gets from being rude towards Nick is that Nick comes around while he's trying to get a tan, and he puts Dork on his chest in So, later when he wakes up and he's walking along, everybody's calling him Dork.
Don't they say, hey, Dork?
Hey, Dork. Hey, Dork.
The secret to a great tan is control. First, I use this number 4 tanning lotion to give myself a nice golden brown. Then I use a complete sunblock to keep those old dangerous rays off my skin. Some dickhead is standing in my sun.
Well, Captain Harris, hey, I didn't see you there. You know, I don't think we've been introduced. My name is
Nick. I don't
Nick.
Care who you are, but wipe, just get out of my sun.
Butt wipe?
Scram, sleazeball!
Okay, fine. Butt wipe, huh? I haven't heard that in a while.
That was great, sir.
Doctor.
Yes, sir.
Now you're in my sun.
Yeah, and then he walks up because Lasard's there with the mayor and the Miami commissioner and stuff. Yes, because all the people on this beach are really, really rude. And they're like, oh, we're sorry to hear that, Captain Dork. So, yeah, he's just having a terrible time, of course.
And oh, my God. A lot of stuff's happened to Captain Harris over the series, hasn't it? I mean, didn't he fly into the arse of a horse in a previous film? And didn't he have something happen to him in the show? No, that was Art Matrano, wasn't it? Art Matrano had the his eyebrows torn off, and Lieutenant Mauser, I should say, he had his eyebrows torn off and his hair taken off. So they really do, you know, screw around with their kind of antagonists in these films, don't they?
They do. Yeah, Nick actually gets a bit of a love interest.
Yes, she's familiar to me. I've seen her before, but I couldn't tell you where.
Man. Her introduction to this movie is literally like Nick's like telling him like, oh, we could go down the beach later or something. They see her with those fucking long ass legs in this white glistening bathing suit. Oh my God. Yeah. She's just like the image of like a freaking 80s goddess.
Yeah.
And he goes up pretending to be a masseur.
She's kind of 80s attractive. And as I said, man, she looks really, really familiar. Janet Jones. And yeah, she was in A League of Their Own and The Beastmaster. She's still acting today in various kind of things. But she hasn't kind of done a hell of a lot. Not heaps. Like 1988, Police Academy 5, A League of Their Own, 92. Yeah, and then she kind of just periodically showed up in a few things here and there, but didn't really do all that much. So she's actually married to Wayne Gretzky, of all people. And
you know,
Wayne Gretzky, I just read that they've got 5 children together since 1988. So there you go. There's a bit of trivia for you that I actually didn't realize. And Wayne Gretzky is like the, you know, hockey NHL player, the stats guy from hell, like just totally one of the all-time greats. So that's pretty interesting stuff.
For sure. You know, they kind of do a slow burn with her, but she shows up later. She's actually a cop as well.
Yeah. They realize it kind of in this weird way because at the Miami kind of thing, they're holding all these like seminars for the policemen in there, like come and kind of learn the latest kind of holding techniques and stuff like that by police officers. And then they realize there's like this scene where they're doing like these martial arts, and Kate is kind of down there. She's taking care of absolutely everyone, isn't she? Like anyone that's kind of coming in, and they're showing how tough she is. And this is actually a perfect opportunity for Jones to show up and doing his same gag.
Same old thing.
The same Bruce Lee kind of, I will take you, and then kind of his mouth keeps moving kind of thing.
For some reason, she's also set it up right next to a cactus patch so she can throw Proctor into a cactus.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. Meanwhile, in the background of this seminar, you've got the three mob guys desperately trying to locate Commandant Lasard because they're trying to find the bag. Of course, they're desperate to get the jewels back, aren't they?
Yeah, it takes them a while to track him down, but they finally track him down. They almost got it too, because one of the guys goes in and switches out the bags, just pretending to be, you know, room service or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, just moments before the bag switch, he had taken out the video camera that they'd hidden the diamonds in. He's actually using it at the time.
Meanwhile, he doesn't realize that his goldfish is gone.
Again, that was a funny gag because he opens up the bag. He's like, oh, where where have you gone? Where are you? But then he realizes the camera's there. He thinks it's a gift from everybody.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
So he's using it and he's looking across into the adjacent hotel and seeing this guy who's got like two women on the go at the same time or something. He looks like so happy to see this guy. The guy switches out the bags. So Lasard comes back to the bag, finds that, you know, oh, his goldfish is there.
Yes.
There you are, you naughty fish.
And I think that's when he reveals the name. I think he says, Birdie, there you are.
I think that's the scene.
Keep in mind, too, it's actually revealed to Commandant Lasard earlier in the film as well that during the event there's going to be a procedural demonstration. Now, as much as it's ridiculous, and it is a bit ridiculous, those two words are pretty key to this film.
Yeah, it is just a quick setup at the beginning when he says, oh, you know, last year they took us and put us all in jail. It was all in good fun. We had a great time with it. And then, yeah, when it comes back later, you're just like, oh, man, it was like, you know, just a quick setup, you know. But I remembered that, yeah, he mentioned it earlier. So
yes, because there is a scene where they're kind of at some, it's like a ball or some award ceremony, and the three mob guys are desperately trying to get the camera back off Lasard, and they fail for whatever reason. I think, doesn't Lieutenant Harris get incapacitated during this sequence? Doesn't he kind of get in between? They try to put a needle in Lasard's bum, and Proctor at the last second gets in between them and the needle goes into his bum.
And into Harris.
And he gets knocked out for however long, and he's totally gone. Like, he's snoring and Proctor doesn't really know what to do and all that kind of stuff.
They keep telling everybody to put their hands up, so Proctor puts his hands up and Harris falls on the ground. He does it like 2-3 times. It's funny every time, actually. I think it's pretty... Well, they put Harris a lot in this movie. I mean, even earlier when they were like limboing, he does this thing where he tries to chat up a girl.
Oh, yeah, we haven't mentioned
star
that.
Star sign thing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he totally stuffs it up. Oh, what's going on there?
He sets his head on fire or something. And then he like tries to put it out by throwing an alcoholic drink on it. He ends up throwing like all the dishwater over him to put it out. And,
yeah,
oh,
that's it.
It's actually a pretty funny sequence.
It is pretty funny. It's very silly, but it's funny. But you're right. They put Harris through a lot. So, back to the award ceremony. After the three mobsters try to get the camera back off Lasard, they fail. And then the lead guy, Tony, who's the guy from Star Trek, he just point blank goes up to him and says, I really need you to give me my camera back.
Yeah, he's just done. He's just give me the camera back.
You know, I need it. It has to be done. And then Lasard kind of gets a little irritated by it. And then out of nowhere, pulls a gun on Lasard and actually decides the best option is to kidnap him.
He makes a bit of a scene because he makes a grab for the camera. It breaks open and all the jewels go flying out. So,
yes.
Yeah, he's got no choice but to take Lasard hostage. And, of course, there's police everywhere. So Lasard, thinking that this is the police procedural demonstration.
Yeah, that's right.
And offers to take them up to his penthouse because he thinks that'll be a good stronghold.
What are those?
Diamonds!
Diamonds! You broke my camera!
Diamonds!
All right. Nobody move, but no man is history.
Boss?
All right. I want to see hands in the air. Everybody's hands up. Now, hands up! Pick him up. I want everybody where I can see them. Get the diamonds.
Oh, I see. A police procedure demonstration. A kidnapping. How original. Oh, I am honored.
Shut up, old man.
Yes, of course. I'm sorry.
Now, we make for the elevator. Anybody gets stupid, he gets filled full of holes.
Police, freeze! Cover me up top!
Let's go!
All right, release your hostage, put your weapons on the ground, and slowly put your hands in the air.
Well said. That's my nephew.
Shut up, old man.
Okay, mister, hands up.
Hi. Nobody's gonna shoot. Not while I got Grandpa here. Right, you here? Anything happen? Sugar, get in the elevator.
Yeah, nobody move.
Nah, he's bluffing.
Yeah, he plays it in such a way that every time the mobsters try to come up with a suggestion, he actually corrects them. He says, she looks at them and goes, oh, gee, I wouldn't do that. Like, that's not a good plan. If I was you, I'd go up to the penthouse. You could secure that area a lot better.
Yeah. He's like, oh, we need a car at the back. With the roof so accessible, I'd ask for a helicopter.
Yeah, that's exactly right. and like he plays it for truth, and he, it's very funny the way he kind of, you know, gets it presented. And it actually turns out that the mobsters and Lassard actually build up quite a rapport.
It's good when they're really trying to formulate that plan.
Yeah.
And Lassard sort of keeps giving them tips. And then all of a sudden, Lassard's just like, uh-oh. And they're like, what is it? I have to go to the little boy's room. Yeah, this isn't a kindergarten.
Yeah, that's exactly. And then one of the mobsters goes, please, boss, please let him go. So we kind of, we've got the kidnapping had happened, and as you can imagine, back at kind of headquarters, you've got the rest of the police cadets formulating a plan to kind of get Lassard back. So you've got Nick, I should say, Hightower, Hooks, Tackleberry, all kind of formulating what to do, and they end up trying to, like, attack the room. Kind of thing, don't they? Like they try and go through the floors and kind of attack the room, kind of Die Hard style. And when they break into the room, there's actually nobody there, and they realize that Harris has actually given them the wrong information, and didn't tell them they wouldn't be the room. That they're actually on the roof, because Harris and Proctor want to get the glory for rescuing Commandant Lassard. So he and Proctor would get promoted to his position once Lassard's enforced promotion kind of ensues. So they're standing on the roof, and I think they're like above a door or something like that. And Lassard and the mobsters all kind of come out, ready to jump on the helicopter. Harris and the Proctor actually capture them, don't they? For a brief moment.
But it's Proctor who sort of trips up Harris while trying to, you know, get down and handcuff them or whatever.
Don't they, like, forget the ladder or something like that? Yeah. Something stupid, really, really silly. And Harris and Proctor actually get kidnapped as well. Does Proctor go as well, or is it just Harris? I can't remember.
No, they just take Harris.
That's right, yeah. I thought
so. So now these guys have Harris and Lassard, and they take them down because they got a boat waiting. So they end up on, like, the Miami wetlands, the bayou or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And they get in this big, like, airboat chase, I think an airboat is more high speed than a hot air balloon. So
just quickly, I reckon this is probably one of the more well-conceived action sequences in any Police Academy film. I quite enjoyed all of the racing around the bayou on those boats and stuff. I thought it was pretty effective.
Yeah, I liked it. I actually liked when they were coming in and Callahan is doing like an operatic rendition of the old, you know, war theme.
It was the Rise of the Valkyries.
That's it, yeah. So she's doing like this operatic version of it as they're coming in.
Which is so random. And I actually read that was improvised by Callahan on the day, they just liked it for whatever reason. And I think they kind of went with it.
Yeah, so it's the whole high-speed chase. And you're right, it's pretty well choreographed and it goes well. And they pretty much take out the bad guys. And it's right there. They've got Tony dead to rights and everything, but he's still got Lassard. And Nick's like, Uncle Eric, but these are real guys. This isn't a police procedure. So, of course, Lassard is just like, oh, in that case, you know.
He conks him on the head and that's it.
Or something, yeah. And saves the day. So a pretty funny ending.
It is a pretty funny ending. And then I think we flick over to kind of an award ceremony, as they all these films kind of end up doing.
Hightower is promoted,
but he's not only promoted. There's a scene that we kind of forgot about where Harris gets thrown into the water from the boat, and out of nowhere a crocodile appears. And I think they do a bit of a setup, like a shot maybe 3 or 4 minutes earlier where like a crocodile kind of slips into the river without anyone kind of knowing, and then when Harris kind of goes into the water, the crocodile attacks him, and then out of nowhere
Hightower fights it.
Hightower fights it kind of out of nowhere, and he kind of ends up being given like a recognition of his kind of bravery kind of award, don't they?
Exactly, and he gets promoted to lieutenant. So,
but not only that, Harris has to present Hightower with the award, doesn't he? Isn't that right?
He has to get up on like a chair behind him and everything to try and get it over his head. It's pretty funny. And then they throw out that, you know, Lassard is still, you know, a pretty good cop, apparently.
Yep.
So if he doesn't want to retire, we're not going to make him.
Yeah, and they basically point that out. And so all of Harris's kind of plans have been thwarted, and Hightower's been promoted, and Lassard's job has been saved. So I'm assuming we're going to be seeing him in Police Academy 6.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to it.
I'm pretty sure he does show up in the next two. So.
City Under Siege. Hey, I was just kind of thinking something about Bubba Smith in these films. He was kind of like a wasted opportunity, like, as far as an actor was concerned, because he's only known for these films. I know he did kind of some other stuff, but back in the 80s, he could have been like an action star or something like that if he wanted to. Like, he certainly had the physique for it.
Well, you know, I guess Arnold Schwarzenegger became an action hero, so why not?
I suppose there was a few of them around there when you had like Stallone and Schwarzenegger, and you had the Steven Seagal and all that kind of stuff. I suppose Bubba Smith wouldn't have necessarily kind of fitted into that mold.
Yeah.
but he did nothing outside of it. I mean, you know, actually, I tell a lie. He did do other things, but certainly nothing to kind of really rave about. I mean, these are the films that he's kind of known for.
So, ratings, recommend?
I'm going to give this a recommend, a soft recommend, not a strong one. I like this film. There are aspects to it I liked. I didn't love it. I didn't think it was quite as funny as the previous ones. It's certainly better than number four, I think. So for me, if I had to rate the films, probably number three is my favorite, number one is my second, probably five is my third, and then kind of probably four and then two. Number two is definitely the bottom of the list for me so far. I'm going to give it a 6 Tackleberries out of 10.
Still sticking with the Tackleberries. We kind of even skipped over him in this movie, didn't we?
We didn't even talk about him at all. And like, of course, he's got nothing to do, just like Hooks has nothing to do. And Jones has nothing to do. And
Tackleberry at least got that scene where he was hogging all the guns.
Truthfully, man, I would have been happy if this movie was just Lassard in Miami, because he's great in this film. Like he's, and his character is strong enough to kind of support a whole film. The rest of them, they're fine, but they don't really, they just don't have a lot to do. And when they recycle the old gags, it becomes a bit like same old, same old. Like here's Jones doing the sound effects thing, like the horse sound with Lieutenant Harris again. And doesn't he teach a bird how to say dork or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Little things like that. But anyway.
Well, Tack's still got a couple of things, though.
Yeah, he does.
Hogging the guns, the Jaws thing.
Tackleberry goes crazy at like some kind of rifle range where he's shooting like mad. And doesn't Lieutenant Callahan have to like calm him down? Like, you know, like he doesn't want to give up the guns. And he's like, man, you've got to share the guns with everyone else. He goes, no, I don't want to share the guns. They're mine.
And then Jaws shows up, so he puts a gun to his head. Yes.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So what about you? Would you give this a recommend?
I give this one a strong recommend, actually.
Nice.
Yeah, I still think number one is probably my favorite, but I think this is a runner-up for me. I like just the craziness of it, you know? We spend so much time at the Academy that it was nice to sort of have this new setting of Miami, and I just, you know, I just love the idea of that and the 80s-ness of it.
Yes.
I love the style and everything. I thought it was a good story. We had more Lassard, which was fantastic.
Yes.
And the jewel robbers and everything. Yeah. I just thought it all worked really well together. And man, I thought it was fantastic.
You thought we were going to be far apart on this film.
I thought we were. I thought you might not like this because, yeah, it is. It's Police Academy 5, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
You know, I just think taking it to Miami just sort of injected it with something a bit fresher.
Well, I think I mentioned to you in the last film, I said, well, now that Mahoney has gone, we can kind of move away from that and actually get to know some of the newer kind of characters a little bit more. And I don't know if they really achieve that all that much in this film. Like, I really do believe those characters have been left to the side a touch. But you're right, man, they do step outside the boundaries of what the Police Academy films have been so far, which is essentially kind of Academy based new recruits with this kind of weird kind of action set piece for the last 15 minutes of the film that doesn't really make a lot of sense. Where this film, like, for an hour, it's basically the end of the film. Like, as soon as you realize the bags have been mixed up and those three mobsters kind of get involved, because they're a big part of this film. They're not like a 10-minute section at the end. They're there for an hour, man, trying to find Lassard, and then you've got this whole story kind of unfolding, and when they do kind of find him, you're trying to work out how to get the diamonds back, then they kidnap him, then they get caught, and blah, 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 blah. But it's kind of like a well kind of told story, which I didn't mind, and it's kind of nice to have a couple of gags in there. As I said, like, maybe it wasn't as funny as the previous ones, but I still got a few laughs, definitely.
So, strong recommend from me. I'm going to give it 8.5 poolside masseurs.
Poolside masseurs. I forgot about that. Oh, my God.
No, I have a great time with this. And, you know, if I'm going to watch Police Academy, it'll either be the first one or I'll chuck this one in. You know, if I'm just going to casually watch it and I haven't seen them in a while, I just think this one's a good little laugh, you know.
What are you talking about?
A well done script.
This is the second time you've watched this series in the last 18 months.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I just want to remind everybody that we do have a feedback section, our Citizens on Patrol section.
Citizens on Patrol.
So if you want to send us any of your thoughts on any of the Police Academy movies as we're talking about them, feel free to shoot us an email and stuff. We'll be giving out our info in just a little bit.
Just to tell us if you agree with us or not. We'd love to know if you're with us liking these films or disliking these films. I could see people going either way, truthfully, on a lot of these movies. And, we're doing our best to review them as best we can.
So let's play another little game of Who Said This?
Let's do it. You ready? Okay, ready? 3, 2, 1, go.
Some dickhead is standing in my sun.
He's so rude in this film, isn't he? Without giving the game away who this character was, this character is routinely rude for the whole film. He actually takes it up a notch, I think, in this film. Anyway.
Yeah. So if you think you know who said that, feel free to reach out on any of our social media. If you're on Twitter, use the hashtag #RewatchQuote and let us know if you know who said that.
So what's next week, mate?
Okay, so next week is Police Academy 6. City Under Siege. So
pull your box set out, pull your DVD out, and let's watch.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
So that's it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. Keep up with listener interaction by joining our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast. Follow the show on Twitter @rewatchpod and visit our webpage, rewatchpodcast.podomatic.com.
And you can always write us an email or record a voice message and send it to therewatchpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you've enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. It's always very helpful. It helps people find the show and build listener interaction. And you can help support all the great work we do here at the Rewatch Podcast by heading over to patreon.com/rewatchpodcast and make a monthly contribution as little as $1, because we're really getting into our series reviews. We did the Star Trek one last year, and doing Police Academy now. We have plans for more film series as we go along.
When you actually think about it, with Sliders, Star Trek, Galaxy Quest and Police Academy, I think you're kind of hitting towards 50-60 episodes, aren't you?
Yeah, man, we're getting right up there.
Yeah.
And of course, after we wrap up Sliders in just a few more episodes, we'll be delving into Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman.
That's right. So there's a lot of good content there, and mate, it's all free.
Absolutely. If you could spare $1 a month, just $1.
It helps out a lot.
It really does.
Anyway.
Yeah, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, mate.
So I'll just say until next time, I just love it when a strange man puts his hands on me.
And I'm so sorry to hear that, Captain Dork.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with the copyright holders of these films, and no copyright infringement is intended. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes as provided in Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Copyright 2016, The Rewatch Podcast.
Hi, Rewatch Podcast listeners, I'm Corey.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Nathan.
First off, let me say that we have all had a blast doing the Rewatch Podcast. Every week, we put out another episode for free for you. And although we enjoy these discussions with each other, we truly do this for you guys out there in podcast land.
That's right, Corey. But we are here today to tell you about Patreon. Every week, there are costs involved in podcasting about film and television, including hosting and bandwidth charges, our own personal internet usage, and film or show rentals and purchases. So we're asking you to become a Patreon supporter.
If you can afford as little as $1 to throw our way per month, it would really help us keep the lights on. And if you want to send $100 our way every month, we wouldn't turn that down either. But it's your choice, and we appreciate the support you bring.
As always, we strive to bring you the best quality shows we can create, and we hope that you enjoy them. So head on over to patreon.com/rewatchpodcast to become one of our patrons and show your support for the Rewatch Podcast.
And if we get enough patrons, we may even be able to produce exclusive content just for the supporters in the form of simply getting episodes before the main feed release, or even bonus film discussion episodes as a thank you for your support. The website again is patreon.com/rewatchpodcast.
Thanks, everyone.